Welcome to the Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and poisoning cases from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 39!
That's nine. So close to 40.
So close. End of our 30s. I still think the podcast is a human being that is aged rapidly, really tragically.
Pretty rapidly.
Death will come soon for it.
Well, quite.
No, hopefully not. No, we don't want that. How are you, Nick?
I'm all right. Still, we are battling through lockdown. So,
yes.
As well as can be expected in such bizarre circumstances, I feel.
Back to remote recording. Any poisonings this week?
As I said, but I don't know. There could be, but I've not really been let out. So,
let out? What? Is well, this from the last bout of poisoning? You're not allowed to leave the house. Is it lockdown or is it house arrest?
There's a fine line, you know. There's a fine, fine line. No, there has been no poisoning. I have not been responsible for any of it.
No creeping about in a top hat and a cape.
Well, yes, obviously creeping about in a top hat and a cape.
As is your wont of a Thursday.
Yeah, come on.
Oh, well, that's nice. I haven't killed anyone either yet this week. Well, I mean, I'd have poisoned people, but no one's died yet.
Yeah, playing the waiting game.
Well, Nick.
Yes?
Are you ready? To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
I'm well up for drinking a cocktail. I haven't had one for at least 3 or 4 days, so...
Sweet Jesus.
I know. What has become of the world?
I mean, I was going to say we could drink poison and talk about cocktails, but this man needs a drink.
I need a drink so much.
The absence of cocktails is poison enough for you. I don't know why I do that voice.
Yeah, it's a weird voice.
We established on Patreon this week that I can do an American accent.
But not an evil American accent.
I can't do an evil American accent. I laugh. I can't do it. I don't know why.
Well, I mean, is an evil accent any different to a normal accent?
No, technically. I always go British. I always go to proper Bond villain sort of kind of, oh, well, Mr. Bond, I think you'll find this tea quite tasty. That sort of thing. I don't know why.
That just sounds like Aunt June or something.
What did your Aunt June do, Nick?
She was a terrifying person.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that later. Well, it's my story this week, but as we've established, can't possibly tell a story without a cocktail in hand.
Madness, I say.
And every week, our cocktail is flavoured by a secret ingredient which is inspired by the tale that we tell. And seeing as it was my story this week,
yes, it was, wasn't it?
Secret ingredient.
And what a corker you chose.
You know what? Okay. It wasn't an abstract thing. It wasn't a sentiment. It's a genuine bona fide ingredient, and it is a porter.
Boo.
Delicious.
Boo.
Yeah, finally. Oh, yes. Occasionally we stumble across a drink that Nick does not like.
It doesn't often happen, but no. You found one.
Now, porters, for those who don't know, and I don't think there's many who won't, but porters are very close to stout. And we know how Nick reacted to the Guinness cocktail that we created a while ago.
That was the worst thing I've ever drunk.
It wasn't really.
Oh, it was dreadful. Utterly vile.
Really, even the orange juice and milk debacle. See, I put an accent on the end because debacle. Debacle. Yes.
Debacle. To make it seem much more fancy.
Multiple debacles was a fucking incident in a glass, is what it was. Well, we both had terrible ones each. But I think a porter, I think, can be delicious. It's often in the craft beer movement that has happened. You can find some amazing porters. They're usually quite strong. You've got lovely flavours of chocolate and spice a lot more so than you have in your traditional stout. You know, a porter can be damn tasty. It's not a quaffing drink, I would say.
No, indeed not.
But I do fear for you, Nick, because there's not a lot of way you can can disguise the flavour. But with porter, what have you come up with?
Yeah, but there are not a huge amount of porter cocktails out there. And I've found one. Okay. And mainly chosen it because of the excellent name.
Okay.
So we have gone for A Darkness at the Edge of Town.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Best name ever for a cocktail.
That is amazing. That is the best name we've ever had. Oh, I'm so excited. I don't know why.
Yes.
the dark. Oh, so many images. Oh, some shivers down the spine. I'm a sucker for anything literary or kind of macabre.
Oh. Well, I think mainly it is where the town has obviously put the porter sellers in the right place, right on the edge. Get back, you evil beer sellers. This is where you're allowed, on the edge of
only
town.
Only the Guinness people are the people behind them.
They're just in the woods. They've been eaten by bears.
The bears have all just gone, ugh,
yeah.
Ugh, so oh my god, the darkness at the edge of town. This needs to be a series of short stories that all of our listeners write. Just do it, guys. Micro stories on Instagram. Oh, I don't know why I'm so excited by that.
Well, I mean,
it could be awful.
It's a great name. I mean, it already starts with a terrible ingredient.
I feel bad for you. That we have another cocktail. I think you made one up, and it was we called it the Mysterium, and it was a bad cocktail, so we took the name back.
Yes.
We would not let it be sullied.
No, but say so, I don't feel I can do that on this one, because this is not my cocktail. But it's got some interesting things, so we shall see.
Well, exciting. So as we are both in lockdown, we are in our separate homes and going into our separate isolation kitchens. Nick has delivered me some of the ingredients, so he's going to tell me what to do. We're going to go shake up a storm, so see you in a minute.
See you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
So, Nick. The darkness at the edge of town.
The darkness at the edge of town.
Okay, so, interesting. It looks, it's dark.
It looks like a glass of flat Coca-Cola.
It really does. Okay, one of the nice things about being in isolation and not being able to socialise is that Nick drops off little tiny bottles of ingredients for me when we're doing the cocktails, because he has the poisoner's cabinet at home, and when I can't have the ingredients, he just drops off the little mysterious bottles are left on my doorstep. It's excellent. My neighbours worry for me.
Mix two of these with your favourite beer and call me in the morning.
So talk us through it, because
well, no,
I have
I'm
questions.
I'm not going to. I want you to
really?
Try. I want you to taste it first.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then we're going to go with what's in it.
I'm afraid.
Well, yes, as everyone should be. I'm not
convinced.
Because
I'm worried that... I'm sure I heard you right, but I feel like I've put a lot of porter in this.
It's a fairly long drink.
Okay. All
right,
Merry
then. Christmas.
So we're going to taste it without knowing what's in it.
Yeah. Well, we know one of the things in it.
Merry Christmas. Oh, we know it's porter. All right, cheers.
Enjoy.
Yeah. That's not as bad as I thought it would be. I think it was because I was mixing it, and I think I licked something off my finger, and I swear to God, I thought it was Jaeger. And I was
guarantee
like,
there is not Jaeger in it.
It's not great. It's not bad. It's not as bad as I thought it was
going to
be.
It's not nice.
I wouldn't choose to order it. I do genuinely keep thinking there's going to be that awful medicinal hit for some reason. Maybe because it's dark and it's a drink, and maybe it's reminding me of Jaeger or something like that. And that doesn't come. And then you're like left with a bit of nothing, and then the bitterness comes in. So, yay.
Well, where on earth you've got Jaeger? There's nothing to do with Jaeger going on here.
I don't know. I don't know. Something's gone wrong there. So what are we drinking then, Nick?
Well, you know what? Give it another couple of goes.
Give it another couple of tugs on this one. All right, hang on a minute. That has gotten better. Oh my god.
You may have heard one of my favourite sayings before about the third sip.
Yes.
And it gets better.
For Negronis.
As I say on a Negroni. So this is a variation of that. So we have gin and we have Aperol.
So
that,
okay.
That was in the bottle. That's in the bottle that I gave to you. So it's just gin, Aperol, porter, mm-hmm. and a squeeze of orange juice, which again is often used in a Negroni as well.
Yes.
So it's one of those ones that the first sip in it is vile.
Yeah.
And then sort of second and third, you go, actually.
Yeah, I know. I'm leaving it. My God, you're right.
It's curiously complex after a few.
The first
sip, few sips,
I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. Okay, we're going to throw this out. It's horrible. It was all bitterness and weirdness. And like,
it's all
oh,
weird.
What's this? But you're,
but when
God
your
damn
taste
it, you're
buds
right.
get used to it, your taste buds sort of acclimatise to, well, they sort of know what to expect, that there is going to be this desperately bitter sort of hitch. But then once the shock is gone, you get to appreciate some of the underlying weirdness of it all.
It's actually and, right.
I mean, what I did do as well, because I thought, I mean, obviously porter is an incredibly powerful flavour as it is.
Yes.
I actually used the Tom's Gin, the Officer's Reserve.
Yes, yeah.
So it's got a real bit of oomph
definitely
behind
does.
It on the gin. So I thought that might help cut through some of the porter being quite so heavy.
It works with the porter. If that was stout, there's no way that would work.
No.
Because depending on what porter did you get?
I've got this one called, is it the Colonel, I think?
Yes, I used the same one. Yeah, Colonel. So Colonel's a great brewery. They do a lot of craft beers. I had another one, which I opened, called, it was a plum pudding porter, which I was worried that would be too sweet. Actually, I'm sort of regretting not trying it in this, because it wasn't sweet. It wasn't like a milk stout at all. It had lots of kind of subtle flavours, and I feel like, oh, would that have worked? But then again, you know, the porter, that
and
one with Negroni.
There's enough going on in there.
Yes, and porters are more complex. Yeah,
yeah. So you've got the porter, you've got a very herbal gin. And you've got, obviously, the Aperol, which is another herbal bitterness in there. So you probably don't want anything more complex being added to that.
It shouldn't work.
It's surprisingly, actually, it's okay. I will finish this drink. It's not going to be one that I run out and... It's made me want a Negroni.
Well, you can make a Negroni after.
I'll drink this one.
Yeah. Yay! It's definitely an odd one. After a couple of drinks, it just feels natural.
Stick with it. It does.
With our darkness at the edge of the town, plural, firmly in hand, are you ready for a story, Nick?
I think we should.
You've had to endure the porter. There better be a story at the end.
Exactly. I better get a story out of this. I mean, okay. Forced to drink beer.
Well, this week, it's actually a continuation of a story, if we will. Now, a couple of weeks ago on Patreon, our lovely, lovely Patreon subscribers were treated to a story of a poisoning in Norfolk. And the second part of this tale, we are treating to... everybody. Yay!
So I'm hoping that people who haven't heard the first part will be able to make sense of what's going on.
Oh, it's all just absolute gobbledygook to them. Yeah,
excellent.
There's no way.
If you have listened to that one, you will not have a clue what's going on.
Absolutely. No, of course you will. It's not just our cruel ploy for more of you to go and join Patreon. Of course, do, because the story's fantastic.
You want to hear the first part of the story and all everything else we have on Patreon.
Oh, yeah.
Go
for it. Want to hear about Rasputin and cults and the Tylenol murders, go check out Patreon.
And mainly us prattling around with our bloopers, because there's so much rubbish we take out of these things.
But enough of Patreon. Yes, this is the continuation that we started on Patreon, but this is the biggest poisoning case out of the two. Continuation of our toxic tales from beautiful Norfolk in the east of England. As I said, you don't need to know the details of the first Patreon story that's connected to this. What you do need to know is that there were two rather well-known poisoning cases in Norfolk in the 1800s, a short space of time apart, and they share one link. The link is the wise woman named Hannah Shorten. Now, do you remember Hannah Shorten?
I remember the name, but she's just a poisoner rather than a wise woman.
No, she was not the poisoner. She is a bit player in these various poisoning cases.
Which...
Well, a wise woman. The wise woman. Yes, she totally a witch. So this is a story of witches and Norfolk and poisoning and sex and intrigue and houses.
Ooh, houses.
Sexy houses. Yes. Oh, it's more than that. There's dumplings.
Now, they see, that would have made a perfectly good secret ingredient.
I offered you dumplings and you said no. you said, don't be stupid, and you threw stuff at me.
Dumpling cocktail could have been... interesting.
Someday, because there are a lot of dumpling cases, one day it will be dumplings. But today is not that day, Nick.
Today is not that day.
A quick recap of the story we covered on Patreon, and do listen to that one because it's pretty damn funny. But what you need to know is that in 1832, a woman named Mary Wright did away with her husband and another family member by way of arsenic via a rather delicious plum cake. Mary was quite the loon, accusing her husband of giving fish to other women and setting fire to her house randomly for attention.
Scandal. I believe it was it not setting fire to a tablecloth?
Tablecloth and her furniture.
And chairs. Yes, it was chairs and tablecloth were the main focuses of pyrotechnics.
Exactly. Just wanted attention, that was it. And haven't we all been there? But while devising ways in which to dispatch her husband, Mary enlisted the services or the guidance of a wise woman, or, as you said, a witch, as she was otherwise known, Hannah Shorten. Now, there's no indication that Hannah was responsible for any of the deaths of Mary's loved ones, but what she did do was show her the mystical ways of arsenic. She used to use arsenic in some of her spells, combined it with salt for some, as you said, pyrotechnics, really, to sort of beguile her customers who had come through the door. It was enough to put the thought of arsenic in Mary's mind. Mary would later be convicted of murder and died in prison while awaiting transportation. Apparently she would sooner die rather than go to Australia.
where all the poisonous things live.
Oh, God, yeah, actually. She could have cleaned up out there. That's the terrifying thing about Australia. I love Australia, absolutely love it. But there are signs when you go in of just, this shit will kill you. Don't touch it. Like, okay, where do I go? Just fucking take your chances, love. No, perhaps with Mary's passing, the people of Norfolk could breathe easy and felt this trouble with poison was all behind them. But no, no. But let us go, Nick. Come with me now. Come with me now.
I'm coming.
Come on. Get your porter. Run. To the village of Burnham Market. But 5 miles away from the scenes of Mary's crimes, and just 2 years after they took place. Now, Burnham Market is a quiet place. It has a pub, a pharmacy, two churches, two. Overkill. Village Green. It's a lovely, nice Norfolk village. It's not a very wealthy place. You're not thinking high society here. Now, Norfolk, I freaking love Norfolk. I went there on a mini break and genuinely, it was one of the best places I've ever been to in England.
It's a lovely place.
It is. Norwich is very nice. The coast. There's many seals. Isn't Dan from Real Life Ghost Stories from Norfolk?
I don't know.
I mean, he goes there a lot. Maybe he has a past and that's where it is.
Perhaps he just likes it.
He just goes, wanders there in the dark. If you're listening, Dan, we love you. And are you from Norfolk? Tell us your secrets. But in Burnham Market, we are going to go to North Street. We're going to saunter down North Street and we are going to chance upon 3 terraced cottages, Nick, all next to each other.
As terraced cottages generally are.
Yes, I felt the need to explain that.
Those fantastic detached terrace cottages.
Well, you want people to picture like 3 cottages that weren't attached. They were attached, goddammit. There's some weird things I explain. I don't know why. Thinking of like workmen's cottages. Sort of.
I live in a terrace cottage. You've been here a lot.
Oh, is yours a cottage? It doesn't look like a cottage. Where's the thatched roof?
What's its name?
Oh, fuck, yeah, actually. Let's not tell everyone the name of your house.
No, indeed. But cottage is in it.
The cottage is in it. Try and find it in Canterbury, guys. Anyway, so 3 terrace cottages. You've got your picture in your mind. Picture your street, Nick. In one house lived James Billing and his wife, Frances, known as Fanny, and their 8 children. It's a small house.
Yep.
Now, you know the size of your house, and there's 8 kids in there.
That would not be enjoyable.
No. In the middle are Peter and Mary Taylor, who have no children, probably don't enjoy living next to the Billings.
Probably not, no. And are constantly banging on the walls.
Peter Taylor was a shoemaker, and his wife was a shoe binder. Peter Taylor also, brilliantly, occasionally worked as a barber, a pub waiter, and a singer.
Excellent.
Yeah. Hopefully not all at once.
What, you imagine like a singing waiter? He goes round serving, singing. Say waiter.
Yes, he was a pub waiter, barber.
Pub waiter.
And a barber. Yeah. And a singer.
So, what? Entertaining. Suppose I prefer that, a barber, apart from all that bloody chat you have to make with your people. Going, oh, are you going to West for your holidays? Shut up, I don't care.
Sing me a song.
Sit in silence. Sing me a song.
Sing me a song and serve me a drink. There we are.
Exactly.
Well, he did a roaring trade. And in the last house, that last house is split into 2. There's a carpenter's shop on the ground level. And above it, Robert and Catherine, also known as Kate, Frary. And they have 3 children. Now, it's important to remember who lives in which house there. All of these people are important. I'm not padding.
I feel I should have written this down.
You're going to need to.
Made a drawing.
There are many, many crossovers here. So, yes, Sunny in Philadelphia style, kind of just red tape all over the place.
Yep. Write it down, everyone. Get your pens out.
Lovely, cosy street in Norfolk. As I said, these people are not wealthy, nor are they particularly well educated, much like Mary Wright in the previous story. But they're living off as well as they can off the land. Now, let's go back to house number 1 with Fanny. Frances Fanny Billings. 46 years young she is. Mother to 8 kids. Actually had given birth to 14 children in her life. 6 died in infancy.
Mm. Yeah.
Not uncommon, nothing untoward, but each. Mm. But yes, she's a washerwoman. Husband is a farm labourer. She's a good church-going woman, known to be firm and strong of character. Later described as being a woman, and I quote, of no ordinary endowments.
Okay.
What does that mean? I think it's all in the tone.
No ordinary endowments.
I mean, if you say it like, she's of no ordinary endowments, then maybe
so,
she's...
So, well, no ordinary... So it implies that she is quite extraordinary in some way.
Well, there. No ordinary endowments.
Does she just have incredibly large breasts?
Well, I wasn't going to say it, but there we are. So whatever they are, they're not ordinary. Maybe she has 6, I don't know. Hence all the kids. Whatever her endowments, Fanny was certainly appealing enough in one way or another to attract attention. helpful, it seems, Nick, and I have to tell you, she and Peter Taylor next door were said to be having an affair!
Scandal.
Scandal! I mean, he is a shoemaking, barber, singing, waiter.
How could you resist that?
Nothing combination
is impossible to refuse.
But you can imagine in this sort of setting, these houses close together. But in a village like this, you can't really be knocking off your neighbour without tongues beginning to wag.
No, and it's not, yes, because, yeah, these houses, they're not, these are houses aren't soundproof.
Oh, no. No.
And it's next door. So your husband's going to know where you are.
Lots of shaking of walls back and forth.
Yeah, this is not a subtle approach.
Gossip starts to chatter in the village about this pair. It's only a matter of time before Fanny's husband, James, finds out. He finds out because apparently he catches them in close conversation in the shared outside privy.
Jolly.
That's a sexy, sexy place to go to, I think.
It's where I have all my close conversations, I think you'll find.
I need to talk to you about the rent. Let us go to the toilet together. Or they just mixed up the schedule and they were just a compromising position fighting over the toilet. I don't know. It's true. There's one privy outside.
I don't know if there was a schedule.
You don't. If you have to share a toilet, I'd want a fucking schedule. I mean, maybe the law of nature would dictate it somewhat.
Well, exactly. Yes.
Just eat all your meals at this time. Well, either way, they're shagging in the toilet. James comes in. Now, James is a passionate man, passionate in a bad way. He loses it pretty much and beats both of them. Peter is pummeled. Fanny has a black eye.
Ooh.
And it's so bad that Fanny actually has James arrested. She calls the police. She kicks him out. Won't be having this. Soon lets him back in again because it's the 1800s. Mm. It's her husband and they have 8 kids to feed. So, yeah.
Well, indeed, yeah. So he's bringing in the money, isn't he? So
exactly. As the gossips are just dissecting all of this over their tea, there is yet more scandal in North Street. For but 2 doors down, at the house of Kate Frary, the third neighbour, she's also said to be having an affair with a Mr. Gridley.
Not Mr. Gridley.
Mr. Gridley comes to town. Oh, yes. So she's shagging someone. Fanny's running next door to shag. The street is shaking. It is just shaking.
Sounds like quite the place to be.
It does. Quite fun. So with all of this extramarital business going on and the gossips chattering away, there are far more troubling incidents that seem to be at hand at Kate's house. Far more troubling than extramarital spanking or whatever they get up to. Now, Kate is a childminder for the village. She's used to looking after lots of the young children in the village while their parents go off to work, including the women as well. And one day she is looking after the baby daughter of Mrs. Elizabeth Southgate, and this is in 1835. And while Elizabeth is out working, she comes back to pick up her toddler, her daughter. She finds the little girl violently ill. Violently ill in Kate's care. And Kate has no explanation for this other than the fact that her husband Robert is also very, very ill in bed. And the poor child is howling in agony. Kate, trying to help the young girl and her mother, gives the little girl some water sweetened with sugar. And the child seems to settle for a little while. But as she's taken home, but 15 minutes later, she is screaming in convulsions. And sadly, the child dies next day. It's said of natural causes.
It wasn't sugar!
Well, now Robert himself is too afflicted with the same illness, but he's not going so easily. Kate dutifully is feeding him sweetened gruel through the night. You want a bit of sugar in your gruel, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't?
Of course. Sitting by his side, soothing him as he rolls in agony. But he seems to recover a little the next day. He's doing okay. Well enough that Kate feels she can leave the house. She can take a trip with her dear friend and neighbour, Fanny, the one in house number one, who has been having the sex with Peter. Keeping up with me here?
Sex with house number
house
2.
House number 2. House number 3.
So now house number 3 has gone shopping with house number 1, who's having sex with house number 2.
Absolutely.
Excellent. I'm on track.
You've got a system. I like it. Kate and Fanny are going to go off on a shopping trip and see a friend of Kate's. Well, a contact. A good kind of confidant. A woman named Hannah Shorten.
Ah.
Yes. Kate is very interested, it's said, in drugs, charms, and conjuration. relations.
Aren't we all?
And she's been going to Hannah for some time for guidance and for readings. Hannah's only too happy to oblige and regularly gives Kate all sorts of predictions and strange bits of witchery. Money, please. There we are.
Yeah, for a delightful fee, I have no doubt.
Grass my palm with silver. Give me a pound. On this trip, Hannah gives a reading to both women. And she looks in her teacup, she stares at the tea leaves, and she declares that both women would be facing troubled times all too soon. The two ask Hannah for further guidance. They even ask her to come back to Burnham Market the next day and attend little Harriet Southgate's funeral, the toddler who died. Hannah does so, wafting around the village mysteriously.
Was she the darkness of the edge of town?
Yes, we could see it as either she's the weird, strange, wonderfully wise woman watching all of this, or she's the pissed woman at the end of the street swinging a bottle of porter, screaming, I tell your fortune! As the two neighbours returned home, it's said that they were met, just by chance, on the street by Peter Taylor. Fanny meets Peter Taylor. How strange to see you here.
Yes.
Let us walk together and talk about that thing that we need to talk about, the thing.
There's a leak in the bathroom. Let's go and look at that now.
Let's look at that now. Let's have a bloody good look at those geraniums in our garden. Fanny's husband, James, comes outside, sees them together again. A furious row breaks out. We know that James has a violent temper. Kate herself goes home to her husband, who seems to be making a gradual recovery. And after this trip to see Hannah Shorten, and after this encounter that Fanny has with her jealous husband who won't let her see her lover, rightly so, Kate, who goes home, and the husband, who seemed to be worsening, seems to be getting better. The two women come together the next day, and they seem to form something of an agreement, shall we say. Around the time of Harriet's funeral. But before they attend the funeral, the two women are rumoured to have visited the local pharmacy, inquiring about a certain type of poison that would be suitable for killing rats and mice in their homes.
So many rats.
They are good housewives. They need something that will deal with these pests in their house. And at the funeral of Harriet Southgate, which the women are invited to, Elizabeth Southgate, the mother, is still friends with Kate and with Fanny. She sees nothing wrong. She absolutely counts them as dear friends.
Dreadful accident or just a natural cause is illness, so nothing to be suspected, I'm sure.
Indeed. It's said at the funeral of Harriet, which Hannah Shorten attends, they go to the neighbours' houses afterwards. She calls in on Kate's house, where Robert is upstairs ill, and she's heard to say a strange pronouncement on entering the house. Dear me, here is smell like a dead corpse.
Just what you want to hear when you go into someone's house.
It's like, well, nice to meet you too.
Welcome to my house.
Well, I was going to give you some cake, but now I'm just going to be sick.
It's always lovely to have new people here. Fuck off.
Interestingly enough, though, around this time, Fanny's husband, James, he also becomes ill, you know, with stomach pains and a fever and the vomiting. He must have picked something up from Robert.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, it must have been.
Obviously, they're sharing a privy and all that sort of thing, so...
They're all fighting over this privy. They can't get into the privy. Everyone's shagging in it. Maybe James and Robert were having an affair in there.
Well, you never know.
Please, I love you. And so these husbands in the two houses, house number one and house number three, suffering awfully. And over in Kate's house, Robert's condition is worsening, and her friend Elizabeth Southgate, the mother of Harriet, comes over and calls and inquires on Robert's health. She's concerned. While visiting, Kate offers her a drink of porter, which is great when you come in. It's like, would you like some really, really fucking strong stout?
That's a strange thing to offer.
It's quite common. I mean, it's like a beer. Or it's like back then, a porter and a beer, you would be offered that.
Yeah, but, okay. No.
no to history. Is that what you're saying?
No, but porter was such a hugely, so much stronger than, yes, absolutely, you would have had beer more than water half the time because it was safer. Yeah, but a porter, as you say, is a hefty, strong drink.
It's recorded as porter. Wasn't that different from stout in its strength? And stout, fucking common in those sorts of places because it needs to be thick
for
and
sure.
hearty and iron, and you need to be drinking that. If you're out working the field, you need something that's going to give you nutrients as well as to make you merry, to give you that little bit of
buzz. Where it gets its name from.
Oh, because the porters drank it.
Because it was a favourite drink amongst like railway porters and stuff like that, who used to dragging luggage around and stuff all day and
hurling it into the carriage, pissed.
Keep their strength up and stuff like that for 12-hour shifts. This was their beverage of choice because it was a meal in a bottle.
Hauling around luggage. Imagine if you're out on the farms of Norfolk.
Yeah.
There we are.
Exactly. So.
But anyway, she offers her a drink of porter and she pours it into a teacup, which I love.
Civilized. Very civilized.
They're genteel. They're fancy.
Oh, if I had known that, well, I would have sort of served this in teacups.
Yes, I should have thought of that. But as she served this teacup of porter, Elizabeth comments, I should not take sugar in porter. She sees white particles in the drink. Undeterred, Kate takes back the drink and hands it to her husband, saying, drink it up, it'll do you good.
Quite right.
And he does. Shockingly enough, Robert's condition worsens that day.
What a surprise.
Violently ill, and but 48 hours later, Robert is dead. Back to Fanny's house. James, her husband, James Billings, he is growing ever sicker. Now we've got that sickness in house one, we've got death in house three. But what about house two? Where Peter
lives?
Yeah,
what about house two? What's going
on?
What
about there? Oh, well, I'll tell you what happens at house two. Peter's fine, but his wife Mary also falls ill. Yes. And it's following a lovely dinner of dumplings and pork gravy. Dumplings, pork gravy.
Another perfect cocktail ingredient.
Do you really want me to make pork gravy an ingredient? You lost your shit when we tried to do beef bouillon.
Oh, that was all. Yeah. That's fair. That was horrible.
Are you one of those people who could actually just drink gravy on its own, like good gravy?
No.
No? No? Not a gravy fan?
I like gravy. I don't pour it into a wine glass and drink it. I'll have
I don't
on a roast. Either. Lovely.
I know, but do you do that thing where you clear it away and you've got the jug of ale? Oh, I have a little spoonful of that. It's delicious. No. No, really? Oh, okay. Oh. I don't either. I'm just saying. So, yes, she has the lovely dinner of dumplings and pork gravy. And she also, that's washed down with a medicine that Kate drops round for poor Mary Taylor.
Very kind of her.
Oh, very good. They're not subtle about the administering of whatever this substance is in the household.
Well, they're not subtle about the shagging either, really, are they? So it's not entirely surprising.
In the street shagging. It's recorded as a couple of reports here that the village blacksmith stopped by for a haircut and a shave from Peter. Remember, he's a barber? And a tap dance and a lap dance.
And a good song.
He sees Kate bring in a bowl of gruel and using the tip of a knife added what looks like powdered sugar.
She's not subtle, really, is she?
Mm-mm. Well, maybe people are that stupid that they're going, you're putting sugar in the gruel. Well, Nimrod. This a sister-in-law visits to also help Mary and care for Peter as well, and she sees Fanny coming in and taking paper out of her pocket, pour the contents into a teacup, hand it over to Mary, and then hurl the paper into the fire. So they're not subtle. They're not subtle.
They're really not. No.
No one raises a fucking word about this, though, at the time.
Oh, no, absolutely.
No, they're fine. It's sugar. Sugary tea. We love it. Well, unsurprising, after this consistent bout of poisoning that everyone has witnessed, Mary succumbs quickly to convulsions, to terrible, terrible vomiting. She drops dead at home. She is dead. Yes. Mary is dead. Now.
Poor Mary.
Now, this is a town built on gossip, and claims of cholera aside, three deaths of adults in neighbouring houses where everyone has clearly been shagging for Britain is going to raise some eyebrows, particularly when no one else is ill in the street at all. And it's enough that when Mary dies, a post-mortem is ordered. Apparently, they open her stomach on her own kitchen table, do it in the house.
Nice.
And they take the stomach out, and luckily they send it off for examination to a local pharmacy. They open the stomach, and what do they find?
I don't know. What could it be?
Dumplings! No,
it's just full of dumplings.
It's just full of dumplings. My God, the woman was mad on dumplings. No, it is arsenic. Arsenic alarm. Arsenic alarm. Arsenic.
So you said that. I was envisioning they sort of cut her open, and this sort of like great sort of like billowing cloud in the shape of a skull comes out or something. in a very dramatic way.
One day that will happen. You can probably imagine that, because they've been absolutely loading the bitch with arsenic.
Exactly, she's full of arsenic. His skull and crossbones just comes out.
Everyone who opens her stomach dies instantly.
Yeah, just arsenic powder everywhere.
Like the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
Arsenic is found. Oh my god. The woman has been poisoned. The wolves start to circle. Fanny, knowing that her time is short, tries to, for some reason, speed up her husband's death. It's said that, why would you not just, you know, back away? Just leave it be. Don't kill anyone else. No. She's at her husband's side offering him dumplings and cups of tea, probably about every 5 minutes.
But then if he's dead, then there's really no one to say, oh, my wife's shagging the next door husband.
Well, so that may have been her logic. It doesn't work. He does actually take one of the cups of tea. He's probably thirsty, god damn it. Yeah. She's there with a whole table full of food going, help yourself, darling.
I mean, mainly, everything she serves is just like powder, so it's quite dry.
Have this powdered tea and this powdered chicken. I don't like any of this. He does take a cup of tea. He gets very ill, but he recovers. Bloody James has got the iron constitution that none of the others did. He powers through. He's a very angry man as well. Apparently around this time as well, Mrs. Southgate, Elizabeth Southgate, the poor woman who has lost her baby, begs Kate to have her husband's body exhumed so it can be tested. Just raise up the body and test it so they'll prove you innocent. And Kate's going, oh, I wouldn't do that, would you? It's
probably not the best idea.
Would you do it? She's like, well, yeah, because then you'll be proven innocent. I'm going, oh, no, No. Fanny is arrested on the 18th of March, held in Walsingham Bridewell Prison. Peter is arrested the next day. Kate, at this point, knows that it's only a matter of time before she is arrested. And there are reports that she tries to visit Hannah Shorten again, or she sends her children there, to get a spell that will tie the jailer's tongue.
Nice.
So he will say nothing about Fanny or her. She also shouts out when Peter is arrested. She's not doing herself any favours. Shouts out when he's arrested, Peter, hold your own, then they can't hurt you. Just shut up. Just
shush yourself. Yes, just shush, lady.
But as they're arrested, Robert's body is exhumed, her husband's body. It's found to contain massive quantities of arsenic. They search Peter Taylor's house number 2, where the lover lives, and they find arsenic. They also find extra dumplings that are filled with arsenic. I love the fact that there's a dumpling supply in there.
There's a dumpling cupboard, yeah, absolutely.
This is telling because there's a lot of stories out there about dumplings and people just like covering it in dumplings because it's quite stodgy and the powder and kind of gruely and everything. But I love the dumpling stack that's poisoned. So the three of them, Fanny, Kate and Peter, are sent to trial. The women blame each other. She did it. Peter denies everything. He's in the middle. Literally, you've got house 1 and 3 yelling at each other. Peter's in the middle. House number 2. Did nothing. Nope. Nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
The jury finds the women guilty. Peter gets away with it.
Oh, really?
His role as an accessory in this trial is ignored.
Ooh.
So he is let go. The courtroom is apparently so packed that there is standing room only as the judge reaches for the black cap. And he speaks of the women's vicious and abandoned course of life, which has been packed with guilty lusts. He urges them to repent their sins as he orders their execution. Kate does not hold her own throughout all of this. She's in hysterics and her shrieks could be heard across the courtroom as she's removed from court. Whereas Fanny is far more emotionless and very stalwart.
More composed.
3 days later, the women are taken to be executed at Norwich Castle. Huge, huge crowds have gathered, mostly of women. The gallows for this occasion were actually moved to the upper end of the castle's bridge, which meant the women had less of a walk, and it also meant more people could watch them die.
Well, that's the main thing. I mean, they're probably, you're charging tickets. I mean, you've got your souvenir stands as well. You want to get as many people in.
The women had less of a walk and more people could see them. Clearly, it was the latter there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The women come out. Kate wore widow's weeds. What are widow's weeds? Are they just mourning clothes?
Yeah, morning dress, yeah.
Oh, right, okay. So I've never actually known what that meant.
No, actually, like weeds.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, is it like dead flowers?
She was like in the pond before.
Okay, so she's wearing a pond scum, but she had to be dragged to the gallows. Literally dragged up the steps.
I suppose you probably have to drag me to the gallows as well, to be honest. It's not somewhere you really want to go.
Well, it's sort of decorum in death and stuff. Fanny wears a coloured dress, a brightly coloured dress. She's fine with it. Walks very steadily, has to help, actually, like, reaches down, helps her friend up the steps, because she's just like, come on, come on. Her friend is like, no! The women are executed in front of a crowd that's said to be about 20,000 people strong.
Christ. More people than are in Norfolk at that point.
The women drop to their death. Fanny dies instantly. Kate, who so did not want to go to the gallows, struggled and finally choked to death.
Ugh.
Their bodies were left to hang for an hour before they were taken away to be buried. And their death masks can still be seen in Norwich Castle's dungeons today.
Ooh, that's exciting.
But what about Peter Taylor?
What about Peter Taylor?
Who got away?
Was he there watching?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Apparently he was in the crowd watching.
Yeah.
And when he expressed great satisfaction with the women's deaths, he had to run for his life because the crowd
tried to
lynch
him. Yeah, I'm not bloody surprised. Idiot, stay away.
So this is from a report. When he ran back to Burnham Market, a crowd was waiting for him. He had to flee again. But because of his actions, witnesses came forward and the investigation was reopened. Taylor was rearrested in 1836, sent to trial, and this time he didn't escape. And on the 23rd of April that year, he met the same fate as the women who had conspired to murder in this street.
Why would you go to the execution? Just, you've got away with it. Just leg it.
He's an idiot. He's an idiot. All his singing and barbering and shoemaking couldn't save him. Said, and there's a postscript as well, which I'll take from some of the sources from this story. Naomi Clifford, brilliant historian who wrote some great pieces on it. A great blog that is linked to a local paper called Weird Norfolk, which is so cool. But it said, the cottages where the three intertwined families lived are long gone. Their reputation tarnished beyond repair and to the point where no one would dare let the haunted houses on Murderer's Row or Poisoner's Piece, as it was later called. It was only in recent years that the chemist shop that sold Fanny and Kate their poison closed its doors for the last time. And there are some that claim that that area on North Street still makes their blood run cold and that their ghosts make the village their second home.
Let's go. I want to go and see.
Hey. As for Hannah Shorten, the wise woman was never called to trial, never testified, and was never seen again.
Ooh.
And that is the story of the Burnham Market poisoners.
That's a very good story.
Yay!
I like that story. I want to go to Burnham Market now.
I really want to go, because I love Norfolk, and I'm like, yes, let's go.
Let's go to Norfolk.
Yay! Poisoner's Cabinet Trip.
Poisoner's Cabinet Trip.
When we're allowed out.
You're on. When we're allowed out, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Now, the cottages are not there anymore. They've been long since torn down, but no one would rent them, as they said. But you can still go to Burnham Market. It's a beautiful area and very, very nice. One of the best things I found when researching this story, and there's multiple writings on it, and, you know, you do your Google and about Burnham Market poisoners, found an article for, I think it was The Times. Oh, my God. The intro is along the lines of, many years ago in Norfolk, there was a tale of poisoners in Burnham Market. But now the area has been poisoned by something far worse. Rising house prices.
God.
It's the most tenuous link where you're reading it going, which sub-editor got fired for that? And there's nothing about the poisonings. It's just, oh, these poor areas have been poisoned by the rise of house prices.
Oh,
it's like, well, it was a shithole when this happened. Sorry. Yay. So what do you think?
I like that story. That's a good story. Yes, I did like the random three cottages. What's going on there? That's
We've got a double act. We have got two people, they're neighbours, they're not strangers, but they decide to work together. It's quite a hard one to pick through and to piece all of it together. House number one, house number two, house number three, blah, 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 blah. But they did seem to make this pact, having spoken to Hannah Shorten, who is this wise woman who, in the earlier case of Mary Wright, gave the idea of arsenic. They get together and then just conspire to do away with their loved ones.
So your loved ones most definitely are trying to kill you. as is now been proven.
Indeed.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
It's pretty cut and dried. And Peter, I'm glad Peter got his comeuppance.
I mean, he could have got away with that one. You've got away with it. Now just go somewhere else.
He would have got away with it if it wasn't for his bloody
execution.
I know, and that's fucking cold. That is
That really is.
If he's gotten away with it, I mean, obviously he didn't care about the women, didn't care about Fanny, but he's going to go watch her die. And then just stands in the crowd full of women going, huh, yeah, stupid bitches, whatever. Yeah, I'm glad he got lynched. Wanker. Mm. But yes, another wonderful tale from Norfolk. Love Norfolk. We've got some fans from Norfolk as well. Guys, you live in an amazing county and we are here for it. Send us more stories of poisoners from Norfolk or from wherever you are in whatever part of the world you are in.
So for more exciting tales, you can, as we said, come and find us on Patreon, where for but $5 a month, you could get so many more stories about all these exciting things. And also, what do you think about A Darkness on the Edge of Town? It certainly is an interesting one. But yeah, I managed to drink it.
Yay!
And yeah, once you get into it, it's actually surprisingly interesting.
I have had a call and hell is indeed frozen over.
Indeed. So give it a go. Recipe will be out this evening on the social. So yeah, try it. Let us know what you think.
And tell us, do you like a porter on its own? Do you like, you've got recommendations of a good porter? Because I don't mind one. Nick will never drink one on its own.
No, I won't.
I will have one occasionally, but send your suggestions if you've got some really good ones. You know what? Doing nothing else in lockdown. Weekends just meld into one long drinking session. So let's make it interesting, people. Come and find us on social media. Have a chat. Share your messages. If you've got some lockdown messages you want to share and you want us to shout out on a future episode, send them to us on social media. And send us more stories. Send us more stories that you want to hear. Historic or new, we will find a way to do it. And make sure you go and check out the merch in time for Christmas. The Poisoner's Cabinet merch. The precious, precious merch.
All the shiny things.
And if you've got time, please leave us a review on Apple iTunes. And if you leave a review, please, can you post it or send us a copy? You don't have to post it publicly or send us a message with it in it, because there's certain places where people, if you're in America or if you're in a different country, we don't see the reviews, so we can't share the love. We'd love to thank you for it. So if you have left a review, send it to us. Don't worry about it. You know, we'd love to say thank you because we really appreciate it. But if you haven't already, leave us reviews wherever you listen to us, because it really, really helps us get up the ranks and keep doing this crazy poisoning thing that you love so much.
And we want to carry on doing it for a long time to come.
Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Bye.